morning, just after 8 o'clock, and you are listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live every Sunday morning on Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio in Las Vegas. That's right, we have a new title sponsor. The we I'm referring to includes co-host Caleb Herring, the last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game.
It stands.
It still stands.
Oh, it's going another 100%.
It stands.
The champagne is Red Bull today.
Mercury Morris over here popping the champagne.
I don't like to celebrate it, but I do.
He doesn't like to celebrate it. You know what? I need some boots, Chris. It got deep on this side of the table.
What year was that?
2013.
1946.
Before the school was even founded, he was... Back when UNLV was Nevada Southern,
way back when it was a community
Nevada
college,
Southern.
Not a football team.
That is
Harvey
awesome.
Hyde was your coach, right?
Yeah.
Not that other
listen,
guy.
On top of being the last quarterback to go to a bowl game and pop champagne, he is also the radio color voice for Rebels football and the co-host of the Tony Sanchez Show.
Were
Wednesday
you old
nights.
Enough to pop the champagne?
When we went to the bowl game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
He was a 32-year-old, 19-year senior.
No,
so he's
not true.
He's Chris Whedon, right? Isn't that the guy who played at Oklahoma?
Chris Winkie. Chris Winkie.
Brandon Whedon. I was 22. It was New Year's Eve. I did pop champagne for New Year's Eve.
That's right.
We played on the New Year's Day game.
Oh, it was awful. It was like a 7 a.m. kickoff here, too.
It was on TV everywhere, but it was stupid.
Nobody watched it, though. It's the Heart of Dallas.
The Heart of
Dallas Bowl.
I didn't agree with it. The cool thing was, it was the Cotton Bowl, and Caleb can say there, and he can say this legitimately, there are little pieces of him all over the Cotton Bowl the stadium field, because he was on the turf an awful lot in
no
that game.
No one can take that away from me. I still have my game jersey from that game, and
I didn't wash it.
I didn't wash it. I wanted it to stay the way it was. I haven't hung it up yet, but it's sealed tightly.
Oh, that's cool.
Bagged.
It's got to be sealed tightly. Your wife would make it be out in the garage otherwise.
No, it was her idea, actually.
I'm saying if it wasn't sealed, it wouldn't smell real good, okay?
But she wants me to frame it and put it up in my man cave. I have a clean jersey, and I'm going to put that one next to the clean one.
But you definitely should... Now, you put the front of the jersey, right? Because it has, the logo of the bowl game?
No. I'm putting the back of the jersey because it has my name, and that's the most important thing. It's my name. I don't care about
and
the
And it has lots of grass stains or whatever?
Lots of grass stains to show that I really played. You know, my son will never question if I played or not based on that jersey.
There we go.
Dad, you could have bought it on eBay and rubbed it through the dirt.
All right, listen. Again, the shows are Wednesday night, the Tony Sanchez Show on The Leader, which is our sister station, ESPN. Also here, Chris Magno Chapman, who you just heard, who is aside from producing a number of shows here at Lotus Broadcasting, is also the locker room reporter for Vegas Golden Knights Radio, and that is right here on Fox Sports Radio. And, of course, joining us in studio today, back our former executive producer back in studio today, wearing and representing a Jets jersey. That takes all kinds of confidence, but I'm wearing a Lions hat, so same thing. Jose, sudden death, Volante. And, you know, Jose, I'm going to throw him right under a bus right now, Caleb. So we were talking this week and, you know, the other day, and Jose's comes into the studio, and he said he wanted to, you know, maybe come in, and he was saying, you know, watching The Wiz, he said, man, The Wiz just doesn't know how to hold a camera steady. I mean, he ripped right on the intern right off the get-go.
Hey, look, mentorship, get with the program. I think if he's the legit guy at doing this, he knows what's best. Look at how steady he's holding us right now.
Is that what it is?
I can't.
Well, shouldn't he come in and teach The Wiz then?
Well, he's here, ain't he?
Yeah, where's The Wiz?
I don't know.
ROTC training.
The Wiz is
probably driving in
with Dorothy pulling schemes.
Well, we welcome Jose back today. And listen, the show is also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live. And that'll be on my page, personal page, Brian Feldman. You can check it out. Caleb will be streaming it. Jose, Mags, The Wiz will probably even stream it, though he's not here. And, of course, the Out of Line page streams it as well. So check it out. It's simple. It's spelled OUTTALINE. And, once again, the show is live, and the phone lines are open. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line that is now called the Residential Bank Corp Studio line. How's that? 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Rams break the huddle. I formation again. Erickson, the third-string quarterback, is under center. The give is to Hunter. Hunter goes up the middle. He gets to about the 2-yard line, where a series of Rebels bring him down, and that's it. The game is over. The Rebels trailed wire to wire, and the Rams with a convincing win. The final score, Colorado State 37, UNLV 17.
Jets win an offensive zone draw. Malcolm Subban keeps the game alive for the Knights. Shifley looked to have the game won there. Back in, Connor is in, he shoots and scores! Kyle Connor cleans up where Shifley couldn't finish. Connor wins it for the Jets in overtime. Final score, Winnipeg 4, Vegas 3.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Well, it's supposed to be what's on tap, but that's okay. What's on tap, thanks to our brand new title sponsor, Residential Bank Corp, which offers locally, they've got offices all over Las Vegas and in Henderson. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, Residential Bank Corp, the company to turn to for all your home financing needs. At Residential Bank Corp, we listen, you win. On tap, as you just heard, both UNLV and the Vegas Golden Knights lost yesterday, and both home teams, both of our home squads played pretty badly. And as you heard, wire to wire for the UNLV football team losing. Yeah, it was kind of like watching Secretariat. If you watch an old film of him run the Kentucky Derby, that's how far out front Colorado State was at the end of the first half. It wasn't pretty. We'll talk about that. And I didn't want to talk about Tony Sanchez because I really do like the guy, but after his team's performance in Fort Collins, we have to. And Magnum talked with Nate Schmidt yesterday after last night's game and hit him with the questions all fans want answers to. Mags has the relationship to get those answers. You definitely want to stick around for that. Plus, Blazin, S&B with C, NFL Week 9, and our picks of the week. And Caleb Herring is on fire 2 weeks in a row. And for this group this year, as sad as it is, that is like the record. I did it once, and now Caleb has won two in a row. I think Mag's won two in a row, too. That's about it, man. We can't pick our nose with a back scratcher in here. But
you know what, though?
Caleb Herring right now has it going on.
I used to know a guy, a former host here, who is no longer in the building, but he used to bring a handicapper on, and he always used to say, he would say, man, this guy's terrible. This guy's awful. He's so bad. He goes, but it's great because if people are paying attention, he's so bad that they're betting against everything he says. So if you're actually savvy enough to realize that as a collective, we suck.
Oh, Mags,
you're making money because you're betting against every.
So ipso facto, we're good. We're good for your
wallet. Right now,
we're making you money if you're smart enough to see what's going on.
Let me tell you this.
I think it's good because we admit that we suck.
Yes.
So it's not like we're out here picking and telling you we're going to be right, guaranteed take to the books or anything like
we're
that.
We're hitting it, we're 97%.
We're telling you, like,
wait a minute,
we probably suck. So kind of we're geniuses. Because
first of all,
we're knowing who to pick to lose. That's more impressive than knowing who to pick to win.
First of all this we stuff. Do you guys have mice in your pocket or something? Because I didn't say a word, so I don't know where this we is coming from.
Oh, you suck, too. You picked the Lions twice this year.
You're right. In a row and lost both weeks.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I did, but here's what conventional wisdom would tell you this week when it comes to our NFL picks. Caleb Herring has won 2 weeks in a row, Mags. What would that tell you? That would say I would put all my money, if Caleb's betting red, go on black this week. That's all I'm saying, man. Two in a row. Are we going to three in a row?
I found my groove, and I'm back. I was going to start tanking, but then I decided that I'm going to... Don't call it a comeback.
That's what's on tap. If you are looking to buy a home or refinance the home you're in, choose a company you can trust at Residential Bank Corp. We listen, you win. And, Mags, now you can hit fact this. Go ahead and play it again.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. My mother, God rest her soul, used to always say, when you have nothing nice to say, say nothing at all. This means today, when it comes to Rebels football, all I am going to say is from the opening kickoff.
We're set to go. Opening kickoff. And Hawkins takes it at the 2. Straight ahead to the 5, to the 10. Makes a left turn, gets to the 15. Cuts up to the 20, 25. Got a seam. He's at the 40. He's at the 50. He's down the left sideline. He's at the 30. He's at the 20. He's at the 10. It is a touchdown for Colorado State on the opening kickoff.
Caleb, I've said all I have to say. Your turn.
Oh, this was a setup from the get-go. Unreal. No, well, I mean, that is pretty much what it felt like. I didn't personally understand the, you know what? I could live with losing a game. I could live with that. Like San Diego State last week, I could live with that. Like, you lost to a good team. You played well through spurts. It was a good college football game that was kind of, you know, a fight to the finish, and it ended. You just didn't finish on the winning side. What I don't like about this situation is knowing what you knew going into it. Like, everybody knew that for a bowl game berth, which is still was still a possibility, as crazy as that sounds after this season, it was still a possibility, or at least bowl eligibility was. You know, having to win out the rest of the season. And whether the players fully understood it or not, or whether the coaching staff fully understood it or not, in some sense, winning out meant preserving employment for the coaching staff. The thing that bothers me about that, knowing all that, knowing that Colorado State's a beatable team, the rest of the schedule you have some beatable teams, what I didn't like the most about this was watching the game was the clear lack of urgency from the opening kickoff. And special teams, of course, is like 100% effort. That's an effort play. Running down on kickoff coverage is all about effort. Maybe discipline, you could say, a little bit staying in your lanes, but that's effort, just getting to the ball and making the tackle. It's not rocket science on kickoff, you know. There's no real X's and O's you can draw up as a coach to make that work. Like, get down there, shed a block, and make a tackle, right? For the game to start that way, and not only start that way, but on the first defensive drive, Colorado State literally walked through UNLV defense and got everything they wanted. I think there was only one play that didn't result in a first down on that first drive. I mean, first of all, the drive started great field position because of a bad punt coverage team again. And then when they did get the ball, they just marched down the field like it was nothing. I think it was five plays. Four of them were for 10 yards or more on that first drive, and they walked into the end zone. So to start the game like that, and before 10 minutes in the quarter, before the 10-minute mark in the first quarter, you're down 14-0 in a must-win game with all of the things I said before the game that you understood as a team. That, to me, was the most devastating part of it. They fought in the second half, and they played better in the second half. But, again, that doesn't mean anything. Like, playing half of a football game doesn't mean much. But I was disappointed in the lack of urgency. And maybe, I've been thinking about this, and I thought about it during the game. Maybe the lack of day games during the year, you know, playing at a night game on the road in the cold weather, because it was cold, but maybe that is the reason they weren't awake in that first quarter or that first half even. But that's no excuse because, I mean, you played a day game against Vanderbilt and you won that game and you played well in that game. So what was the difference in the effort and the enthusiasm and the urgency? That's what I watched, was a team that wasn't as energetic at all as they were against San Diego State. And Colorado State didn't do anything special. It was just they came out and played harder and jumped out in front. And that's pretty much the game was decided in the first half. And, you know, shooting yourself in the foot along the way doesn't help, but the lack of urgency from the opening kickoff, like that highlight just showed, was, to me, the most disappointing part of losing that game.
No question. When you start like that, you're immediately under the eight ball. It's terrible. And it, like you said, it spiraled downhill. And we talked about last week after the San Diego State game and what kind of loss and how UNLV would respond. Would they respond by getting up for this game and saying, man, we just played a pretty quality opponent and played them really well. And other than a doink off of a goalpost, which would have put the game into overtime perspectively, that's a game that we should have won. So do you go into Colorado State saying, well, technically, if you look on paper, San Diego State's a better team than Colorado State.
Right.
And we just about beat them. We've beaten a Southeastern Conference team in Vanderbilt. This should be a winnable game for us to go on the road, really, you know, take what we learned last week and go with it. And one of the things last week that cost them the game was special teams, Caleb. And
right.
That's where 100%. You take this week and you reorganize your special team. You make changes. You make adjustments. And they did. And they were worse.
Here's the thing. So what I thought was funny, too, because special teams as a whole did hurt them last week against San Diego State. I mean, the punt coverage team was the one that hurt the most. So, and that's the one that gave up 7 points. the kickoff coverage team last week was actually decent. I think San Diego State started four drives inside the 20-yard line because of kickoff coverage. Every time the Rebels kicked it off, I don't know how many times off the top of my head, but every time the Rebels kicked it off, they started the drive inside the 20. There was no touchbacks, but they started their drives inside the 20, which was good because San Diego State actually has a better kickoff return team than most. They've run back kickoffs a lot. So then I guess the focus then became on protecting punt last week. And then it almost seems like they didn't cover kickoff at all, like based on the fact that the opening kickoff just looked so bad. But, I mean, it is what it is. They only kicked the ball off once after that, so you didn't really see how bad the kickoff coverage team could be, but
like our friend Chris Doug says in the press box on kickoff returns, Colorado State was 1-for-2.
Well, like, you know, the thing is, like Caleb said, the lack of urgency and the lack of, hey, you know what, if we lose, we're playing for nothing except pride the last few games of the season. They didn't really seem like they played with any pride yesterday.
No.
You would have thought coming off a game against San Diego State, a team that they were heavily underdog to, that they would have been like, hey, you know what? We could play with anybody in this conference. Right? Like, you look across the board, and the thing that frustrates me the most is Colorado State's not more talented than UNLV.
No.
They don't have better players.
No.
They're not Boise. They're not San Diego State. And I think you can even make the case that San Diego State, across the board, talent-wise, they're probably not much better than UNLV.
No.
What it comes down to is it comes down to coaching, it comes down to preparation, and it comes down to intensity.
I think,
and those kids did not have the intensity yesterday playing like their bowl lives depended on it.
Yeah.
You cannot. It's inexcusable to give up an open, and that's not on the coach.
No.
Right? The coach doesn't.
I agree with that.
The coach 100%. Doesn't give up the opening kickoff.
Yeah.
That's not on him. That's not on the special teams coach. That's on the players.
100%.
And
oh, you know, it's on desire. It's on it. 100%.
Like, you know, and I don't ride kids, right? Like, that's not my thing. Like, to me, you're a college kid. If you boo a college kid, you're a scumbag. Oh, I'm sorry.
I agree.
You know, you can still say, hey, you know what? You guys need to be better.
Yeah. No, and 100%.
And those kids on that, they got on that plane last night, and I'm sure you were on the plane. I'm sure it was not a good mood.
Well, I have thoughts about that, but
well, it shouldn't have been.
We're gonna have to hear those. But we got to get to before we leave the subject of UNLV, and I definitely want to hear a little bit about the plane ride because that's kind of cool. But we got to talk about the coach, and I mean, when you look at the coach, Bobby Hauck. I mean, excuse me, Tony Sanchez.
Why do you do this?
I mean, Caleb. What goes on from this point forward? I mean, there's still a few games left. I guess if they win out, they get 5 wins, and it would be another win against Reno. It would be the Cannon. But, I mean, in all seriousness, yesterday's game was an embarrassment. If you are an alumni, if that's Michigan State playing that game yesterday, being an alumni, I'm embarrassed. I truly am. I'm not a member of the football team, but I'm embarrassed. It's like, man, that's terrible.
Yeah.
What a horrible representation of my university. So what do you do?
And from a university standpoint?
I mean, like you said, I'm not going to blame the coach for the opening kickoff.
Okay, no,
but
yeah.
I will blame the coach for the lack of intensity in the whole team.
There's several other things that
the mood, Caleb, I coach Little League Baseball, and I could get 10-year-old kids fired up to play in a game.
Well, I will say this. I watched the sidelines often during the game, and the coaching staff was fired up. I mean, Sanchez was lighting up the refs, and I think as a player, you like to see your coach do that every now and then. So he's lighting up. He was intense. I'm not questioning his intensity or like he came out and late Nick. He coached his tail off. There was things coaching standpoint wise that I think could have been handled better, 100%. But as far as the university, where do you go from here? And I wouldn't be surprised if behind now this statement is not what I think. This is not what I would do. But this is what I'm just saying based on what.
Yeah,
what was said before the season.
An educated guess of what the university would do.
I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if behind closed doors the decision has already been made to move on coaching-wise. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the decision. Now, in terms of finishing the season, if you win the last 3 games convincingly and beat Reno and get the Cannon, keep the Cannon red, I don't think that changes that decision. I think it just puts salt in the wound. It adds, it makes you even more perplexed as to why the team couldn't win games early in the year and keep themselves both eligible. If they decide to all of a sudden turn it on and win games at the end of the season, I'd be frustrated for Sanchez in that situation. I would almost rather it be a valiant effort and finish the season with two wins and, well, three wins and beat Reno. I will never say that I want to lose to Reno.
Well,
but
of course.
Yeah, so I would rather that be the case and it be understood that Sanchez is moving on.
Yeah, you
and
gotta, time to part ways.
And like I said, this is not my personal opinion. I personally, and this is an unpopular opinion because of the lay of the land and UNLV athletics and sports and what I feel like UNLV is willing to do coaching-wise. I personally don't think that letting go of Sanchez is the right thing. And it's not because I think he's a good dude. It's not because I genuinely think he's a good person. It's because I just don't see a plan in place for the future. If you can tell me a realistic hire for next season that's going to result in more wins than Tony will get you next season, then show me that and show me what you're willing to pay that person. Don't say Urban Meyer. Nobody throw that name out here because we're not getting Urban Meyer.
Stupid.
We're not getting any. I don't feel any Power 5 head coach is going to come down to the UNLV ranks. That's just me being honest. So if you're going to give me somebody that's better as a head coach that will give you instant wins next season, because I'm not talking about somebody you think can recruit a better class. If your concerns are wins and losses, not program building, then I don't see a better fit right now. Tony has built something for a program from literally nothing. He's built it from the ground up, literally, and he's pushed this program 10 years into the future without winning games. So, and I don't think this year is the year to do it. And I think, this is just my personal opinion, I think next year you let him go. I think next year wins and losses are his measuring stick, and then you cut
but
ties
real,
with
real
him
quickly,
there.
Though, and
that's
and,
just my opinion.
And I want to hear the plane ride, the thing is, Caleb, is how fair is that then to a guy like Marvin Menzies if you're going to give Tony Sanchez another opportunity Menzies comes in
you can't compare though because it's an apples to oranges comparison.
How is it an apple to oranges?
Because Tony Sanchez inherited a mess.
Yeah.
Marvin Menzies took over
from a program standpoint.
From a program, exactly.
Marvin Menzies inherited
a 12-man team that was a mess. Tony and Harriet inherited a football team that the previous regime did not recruit to fill the roster.
He
inherited a team that didn't invest in the football
program.
Marvin
Menzies lost everybody.
Brian, hear me out. From a respect standpoint, UNLV basketball is a much higher echelon program respect-wise than UNLV football.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, because unfortunately Menzies
the realm of this community.
And let's be honest. Let's be honest though. Marvin Menzies wasn't the hire. It was Chris Beard. And Tina Kunzer Murphy hit a home run with that hire. It was unfortunate for her that for some reason Georgia Tech wanted Josh Pastner to be their coach. And Tubby Smith.
And Mick Cronin, too, was supposed to come be back. It was still the third choice.
That was a scam.
But it was still a slap in Menzies' face saying, you are as far down as we're going to get a coach.
And the reality is, I would say, I'm just saying from, because I've obviously never played D1 basketball or football or coached D1 football or basketball.
Right.
I would say it's easier to build a winner in basketball than it is in football.
That's why football is the ultimate team sport.
All you need really is two dominant players in basketball.
Well, it's a five-man field. Yes, you got 22 guys that you rely on in the NFL, plus special teams.
The disadvantages that UNLV has compared to other schools, even in the conference when Tony Sanchez took
over. The only football program that I know of, and I'm sure in the conference, that doesn't have its own facility. Like, as far as this is our weight room, this is our locker room, it's separate. Even our baseball team, even our basketball team with the Mendenhall Center, all those teams, the other major sports, if you will, for college at UNLV, had their own facility. And that's in 2019. That's a huge part.
I understand that, but they're about to play in an NFL stadium, and everybody knows that.
But Brian, the thing is, unless you know you're going to be able to get a guy like Dirk Cutter,
show me the lineup.
If Chip Kelly got fired at UCLA,
you're not getting him either.
But
And there was a plan in place. You said this is the money we set aside to hire such a person.
Here's the thing.
Go for it.
You are not in this day and age because I think someone told me Craig Bohl makes like $2 million a year. Tony Sanchez is making a little more than half a million. Yeah. Unless you are willing to, and I think you could say Craig Bohl kind of earned that when he was coaching at the lower levels, winning national titles, building programs. I mean, Wyoming's not a great program, but you know what? They're respectable. You're not going to, if UNLV doesn't pony up the money,
right?
And they haven't proven.
There's no proof to say that they will.
And I don't want to hear, oh, well, we're moving into a new stadium. And it's like, well, you know what? Maybe you get excitement just because it's a new coach, but if you hire some coordinator who has zero ties to Vegas, who has no understanding of Vegas, who doesn't understand the Mountain West, I mean, you're not – even coordinators are making more – like if I'm the example.
A special teams coach at Alabama makes a lot more than Tony Sanchez.
Yes, and that's leaving that job to take the UNLV job.
Correct.
You know, you need to pay. And I'm sorry, writing a check for $1 million is not going to get you a quality coach.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not. Listen, I'm amazed we've just given UNLV football half the show.
Why shouldn't we?
They don't deserve it.
I almost
because they
swore.
Don't deserve it. They don't
now. No, I don't think it's
you
about
know what?
I think it's about this is the sport. This is the
Well,
team.
They played yesterday and it's big news
Cover
right
them.
Now, but listen, you know, I am not going to disagree with what you said that Sanchez should get another year based on everything we've talked about. I'm agreeing with that.
Well, if they lose out, if they lose their next three games, that's a different story.
If they win the next three, like you said, Chris, I don't want to hear fans booing college players, and the last thing I want to see is fans being New Orleans Saints fans from the 70s and wearing bags over their head. And if Tony Sanchez comes back next year and they lose like the first two or three games, I think it would get really ugly here. And he doesn't need the beating that he would take by the media and everyone else for not losing the job last year. The one thing they shouldn't do, and I talked to a reporter yesterday, I'm not going to mention his name, when I was getting ready to go into the locker room of the Vegas Golden Knights, and he said, man, they should have fired Tony Sanchez when he got off the plane from Colorado State.
That's stupid.
I didn't respond to that, but I disagree.
I would have said that's stupid.
I disagree.
Said reporter's
especially
face.
especially after what happened with Dave Rice, and we saw the debacle
it's
that
debacle.
Did for the basketball team.
Mid-season fires are stupid.
Especially at the collegiate level,
It's the worst version of the panic
I'm not going to disagree. Listen, let's take a break. On the other side, you'll hear Magnum's discussion with Nate Schmidt. Again, it's pretty cool. After the loss last night, really disappointing to have a 3-1 lead going into the third period and then lose in overtime with a little bit over a minute to go. It was tough to watch. It really was. This Golden Knights team, the first period they played decently, and really, again, I watched this team skate on their heels and skate in wet cement the second two periods, and it's got to stop, and they've got to find a way to correct this. Chris, before the game, and we'll talk about this after the break and during nightcap, but I heard Chris, talking to the reporter that I'm talking about that made the comment. Now you'll know who it is that you were talking to him before the game when I first saw you at the Vegas Golden Knights game. He's the guy that said that Sanchez should have been fired after the game thing. So now you know who I'm talking about. He doesn't, though. I would never throw him under a bus. I like the guy. But my point is that
I'll throw him.
Tell me
during the break and I'll throw him under the bus.
Well, I can't. We're on Facebook Live. I'm not doing it. But the whole thing is, Chris, is you and him were talking about perspective line changes. And one of the things I heard you say was changing a line like taking Stastny off the Pacioretty Stone line and replacing him with Glass and switching those guys around. Not a really bad move when you think about the skill sets and how much I think Pacioretty and Stone could complement Cody Glass's game. And I'm not disagreeing with you. We'll talk about that. We also are going to do S&B with C. The Silver and Black Band lost a tough one to a really good Houston Texans team last week. I don't think that's indicative of the rest of the Raiders' season. They're playing decent football a lot better than I thought they would be. We'll talk about that. We've got the NFL coming up. And, of course, Blazin', man. I'm interested to see what you guys think. Mine's going to be interesting as well. All that right here, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. We'll be right back.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Nate, it seems like you guys have kind of lost your intensity the last two nights. Montreal was the third period tonight. It seemed like from the second period on, you guys kind of lost it. What's going on?
Yeah, you can't play a partial game in this league, and that's what we did. We didn't have what we did have in the first period sustainable throughout the rest of the game, and that's just not a good recipe. And again, I said this before, it sucks because you have goaltenders that are playing incredibly well. Malcolm played fantastic tonight, made some outrageous saves, a couple great ones in the overtime, and I don't think we had a chance. I think maybe one chance halfway through the third period on, you know, into the overtime even. And that's just not good enough. I mean, you can't do that in this league. You can't do that, you know, period. But you can't do that especially when you have a two-goal lead. You sit back and wait for the other team to come at you. I mean, that's just a recipe for disaster.
It seems to be becoming a trend. How do you guys stop it from becoming your identity?
Our identity is much more than that. But I understand where the sediment's coming from with how we've been playing and as the games have been going on. It's something that it has to be addressed in order to be a good team. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about how we are a good team, but right now we need to show that we're a good team first.
And they really do need to show that they're a good team. And Chris, you know, a lot of the fans, and especially, I'm not going to say fair-weathered fans are learning hockey here in the West Coast, and I'm tired of people beating them up because they don't know hockey when hockey's been in Vegas a little over 2 years. Come on, man, give people a chance to learn the sport. It's a whole new game. But I think the Vegas fans are catching on. And, you know, but people are looking at this team now, and they are starting to establish an identity of a team that really does not play a complete full game in three full periods. Well, and that's something they've got to do.
You know, this is now the second time or third time this season they've blown a two-goal lead at home. Remember, they blew a two-goal lead to Boston. They didn't look very good against Nashville. They had moments where you're like, all right, they're in it, but they were basically outplayed by the Predators in that game. They were blown out by the Coyotes. They were out. They were lucky to escape Chicago with a win. You know, the thing is, Brian, they're not playing 60 minutes. You're now 15 games into the season. There's a problem if after 15 games, you're not playing a full 60 minutes. I mean, this is the NHL, and Nate Schmidt said it. You can't not play a full, complete game because these teams are all too good. You know, of all the major sports, there's more parity in the NHL than anywhere else, right? Like, yeah, you look at the NBA and you're like, you know what? Yeah, there's maybe six or seven teams that come out of the West they could win. There's probably 25 teams that could win the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
There's a handful.
You saw the worst team in hockey January 3rd win the Stanley Cup last year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, Ottawa's got no chance, right? The Devils, they stink. The Rangers, they stink. But you know what? The Golden Knights, despite the fact that they're playing bad right now, they could win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
The San Jose Sharks are in last place. They have the fourth worst record in the NHL, I think. They get it together, they have the team to win the cup,
mm-hmm.
right? So anybody can win, but you have to play complete games. And, you know, the Montreal game, it was a third period where they went to sleep. They took their foot off the gas. Last night, after the first period, actually, I'll say, after Tuck got hurt, they seemed to play with a lot less intensity. You know, they sent Reeves out there to fight Lowry. Reeves didn't. I don't think Reeves knocked him. You know, I don't.
Lowry won the fight, Chris.
Yeah, I mean,
he won the fight. I don't know if you could say he won the fight.
It was a draw.
It wasn't a clear win. But the bottom line is, when your stuff's all messed up, I mean, Reeves literally had to take off his jersey and reestablish everything on his body on the bench.
Lowry was pulling this jersey over his head.
But that's what a good fighter does.
Well,
if I'm fighting Ryan Reeves, I am taking every advantage I can get.
It wasn't like he stood there.
No such thing as a fair fight.
No, it's not like
he stood there and went toe to toe. I mean, he answered the bell, and credit to him for answering that bell. But I mean, he wasn't willing to. He went in, but he wasn't going.
I don't know what
Reeves.
Reeves has this like velociraptor thing he does before he fights. It's almost like a little hook out here.
Well,
It's like a Muhammad Ali rope a dope.
I think he boxed a little bit. But,
yeah, he has that little like you said. But, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. They lost their intensity after that fight, and the reality is, for two periods, Winnipeg was a better team. And Nate also said it. third period in overtime, we really only had one chance.
Well, one thing I will tell you, Chris, that we did see yesterday, Malcolm Subban made over 30 saves in the
game. Malcolm Subban is a good goalie.
And played really, really well and answered the question, yes, Malcolm Subban is formidable and will be fine in net, but they have to play in front of him. Malcolm Subban, on two of the goals they gave up, they completely hung him out to dry.
Well, the first goal they gave up was a bad giveaway.
And the last goal, yes, it was icing. I'm not going to disagree. I could not believe that call was not made. It was so blatant. I mean, Nate Schmidt was beating him to the puck anyways.
Well, the ref had his arm up.
Yeah, but he fell.
When Nate Schmidt fell, he put his arm down.
Yes.
You know, and Schmidt and Connor probably didn't see it. They didn't see the ref because the ref was behind them. But you could see Malcolm saw the ref put his hand up.
And it took his concentration away a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Malcolm didn't blame it. After the game, he didn't say, "Yeah, you know what? It was because of that." But I mean, when you relax for just that second,
it's all it takes.
Yeah, I mean, the game is so fast.
It was bang bang,
and guys behind the play, they see the guy put his arm up.
Yep.
You know, so and Gallant said after the game, he said, "Look, you know what? They didn't really have an explanation. They realized they made a mistake, and they did. And you move on from it. We moved on from it, and they still lost the game."
Yep.
Like he said, even if they didn't score there, they were going to score.
Yep.
And I think Gerard Gallant has a problem on his hands.
Well, he definitely has to do some reorganizing and rethinking and look at who he's going to play and who he's not going to play. Really sucks that Alex Tuch finally comes back and we don't know exactly
he's
what's wrong
four
with
periods.
Him. But that's it. And I mean, it looked to me like a chest injury, the way that he went down and the way that he was hit.
He got hit in the head.
Yeah.
And you hope it's not
a concussion.
Not a concussion or a head injury.
Right.
You hope maybe he just, you know, was a little shaken up and, you know, a little sore, and hopefully he'll be okay.
I hope so.
But, you know, the thing is, you just didn't, you were missing Alex Tuch for 13 games. He'd only played one game.
Yeah, I know.
One full game. You know, he got hurt at the end of preseason.
And he was looking good in a little bit of time we saw him yesterday.
Yeah.
He looked good.
He did look good. I mean, it's, but, you know, I think it speaks to one of the issues I had going into the season, and that was I didn't feel there was enough depth at the forward position, and it looks to be that way right now, because last night in the third period, Gerard Gallant really only played one line.
Pretty much.
You know, he did play the Pacioretty-Stone line, but there was only one line that was out there generating any type of possession, any type of zone entry. And that was the first line of Marshall Carlson Smith.
Their main line, you're right. And real quickly, to move on, but I wanted to say, you know, something you mentioned earlier, why 25 teams could win the Stanley Cup final. The NHL is very, very unique in the respect that, Chris, and we all know this, and we'll elaborate on more as the season goes on, but it's goaltending. It's the only sport where a hot goaltender, I watched it, and the most glaring example of this was the LA Kings' first Stanley Cup recently in the last decade with Jonathan Quick. Yeah, Jonathan Quick played so out of his mind. I mean, they all use all these cliches, standing on your head, seeing beach balls. That was Jonathan Quick throughout the entire Stanley Cup playoffs that year. It was magical to watch, and that's the difference what a hot goaltender can make. And Marc-Andre Fleury's done the same thing in his career. Sidney Crosby's rookie year, Marc-Andre Fleury, as good as Crosby played, Marc-Andre Fleury, they had a 3-1 deficit to the Detroit Red Wings, and they won three straight games because of Marc-Andre Fleury and his ability to keep the puck out of the net. Incredible. Chris, last thing on this, and then we'll move on because we've got a lot to talk about in a little bit of time, but this team now goes on the road for four straight games, five of their next six on the road. I was talking about this last night in the press box. It's going to help them. I, for some reason, I really believe that this will get them out together where they're all together. They're on the road. They're not at home. They stay together, and hopefully this will re-energize and refocus them. And Gallant does need to mix things up a little bit.
Well, yeah, you would. You know, they always say road trips are good to help the team bond. Problem is they've got a pretty difficult road trip.
They do.
Columbus, who's playing pretty well, great goalie, Kuprasalo, right now. Then they go to Washington. Washington is who they are, right? Everyone knows who Washington is. And then they go to Detroit, right? You're like, yeah, that's an easy game, but there's never an easy game on the road. So, I mean, it's a pretty tough stretch where they're, and I think then they finish in Toronto.
Yeah.
So you've got, realistically, three games ahead of you. I won't put Detroit in that category, where you're probably playing a team that's just as good or better than you. you're going to have to find some answers quick. Otherwise, this losing streak that they're on could snowball into a stretch where you're losing 6 of 7, 4 in a row, 5 in a row. Yep. You definitely don't want that, because this is kind of where you can separate yourself, because your main rival, San Jose, they look to be dead in the water. But there's other teams, Vancouver, Arizona, Edmonton. Edmonton just went into Pittsburgh yesterday and won.
Yeah.
So, you know, that the Pacific Division, everyone says it's a bad division. It's not.
It's a division that can really surprise you. Because the thing is with the Pacific Division, like you talk about the Edmonton Oilers, they got the best player in hockey on their team. Anything can happen. When you got like a guy like Conor McGregor, anything can happen.
McDavid.
Conor McDavid, what am I saying?
Not that Irish lunatic.
Yeah, seriously.
The other Conor McGregor.
Real quickly, Jose is getting ready to exit. I want to thank you for coming today. And before you leave, give me your pick of the week. Right now, we're going
to
do
my pick
early.
Of the week. I got to go with my Jets. The Dolphins are the worst team in the league. There's no way we lose to them. If they do, I'm not wearing a Jets jersey for the rest of the season.
All right, Jose's picking for
I won't
them.
Bet the Jets, but I will bet them in the second half, because Miami is atrocious in the second half.
Yeah, fun, though. Thank you for having me back in today. Appreciate it. Great show as always. Keep it up, guys.
Hey, we appreciate you, brother. Listen, we're going to take a break. We still got Blazing. We got S&B with C. We got our picks of the week. You just heard Jose. He's going with the Jets, so you know you probably want to put your money on the Dolphins. We'll be right back after this. It's time for Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and the Montecito Crossing Plaza. That is off North Durango in the 215. Let's call it a long home run from Centennial Hills Hospital. We'll be there tomorrow night hosting the Monday Night Football Party, and coming up in about a week, we have a Vegas Golden Knights watch party at the same location. We'll be giving away 2 tickets, lower bowl tickets, to the Vegas Golden Knights game. So come on out and check that out. Love to give you some free wings, giving away some unbelievable glassware. Pretty cool. Make sure you come and check that out. And I'll tell you what, I'll start it off with Blazing, guys. What a World Series, man. I mean, I don't always get wrapped up in it. It's 7 games, and, you know, it depends on, but it is so cool that we've never seen this in history, but the road team to win all 7 games and the way that they did really made this World Series stand out to me, and especially the Washington Nationals. I mean, you're talking about, I believe, the big train, Walter Johnson, was on the last World Series team of the Washington Senators. So it's pretty damn cool when you see this happen. Our nation's capital getting a World Series that way. Feel bad for Houston the way they lost the World Series, yes, but pretty damn cool. And and what's really cool, and I'm sorry, Bryce Harper, but man, can you imagine being him right now? I mean, him and his big contract, and
you look
he
like
goes
a
away.
Fool.
Oh my God,
an absolute fool!
He full really no does. Trade clause too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my Lord! I mean, you want to talk about? You know, I mean, a year, a ring. You know how hard those are to come by, man.
I
mean,
I still think they're
ask Kershaw.
I mean, he may end up winning one, but at this rate, it doesn't look like he's going to win one anytime soon. Although Washington's definitely going to take a step back because Strasburg opted out of his contract.
I mean, I'm sorry, guys. Can you imagine, and real quick, sorry, Caleb.
Go ahead, no.
But Bryce Harper and Mike Trout, at one time it was debating who was going to be the better baseball player between those two. I mean, Mike Trout is going to go down as one of the greatest players in the history of game for all his encompassing
play. And once the Angels sign Garrett Cole,
oh my God,
he will finally have a pitcher. A dominant pitcher.
It's about time.
Yeah, he needs one.
But I mean, it is amazing the level and the difference between those two players. I mean, Mike Trout, it just like I said, they can't be mentioned in the same breath anymore.
They shouldn't be,
and
yeah.
At one time, they were neck and neck, and it's just.
I feel like it was maybe the passing of the torch that people saw. You know, of course, Bryce Harper being the new kid on the block, kind of to have the potential to be a Trout. But Trout's been doing it for so long, it's like, no. This level of sustainability in baseball is ridiculous.
And Trout like you said, shows one up. How do you do that, Caleb? I wish 162 more games, you show up every single night.
That's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
I wish that baseball did a better job of marketing their best players than they do. Because I don't think – and somebody said this to me a while ago. I don't think if Mike Trout walked past you in the mall – the average person who's not a baseball fan would recognize him.
You might be right.
And that's a tragedy, and I think a failure on the part of baseball, why the sport maybe is losing
popularity.
Football
players wear helmets, and I'll bet they're recognizable.
You'd recognize like Lamar Jackson or, you know, the best NFL player. If Tom Brady walked by you, there's no way you're not going to recognize him, even if you're not a fan of football. But if you walk past Mike Trout, who's been Caleb, you'd
recognize Mason Crosby, and he's a kicker.
Yeah.
Before you'd probably recognize Mike Trout.
Yeah,
and that's really sad,
that's
man.
A shame. That's
Maybe
a shame.
They need to talk to Roger Goodell, because as much of a pain in the ass as he can be, he knows how to market his sport.
Yeah. So
and he's makes the, worth the money he makes. But that's a really good point. Baseball does not market their best players. Because a guy like Mike Trout, on top of just being an unbelievable talent,
a good human
he's
being.
A great guy,
he's a,
man.
He's a good dude. Yeah, like, I want to hang out with him.
Right, seriously.
Jesus.
Are
you done with your blazing, though?
I am. That's my blazing, man. Just the World Series. Hats off to Major League Baseball, man. This was truly a winner.
Game seven. Best game two words seven. In sports.
Yep.
So, no, that was. I agree. Great game seven. I'm going to go with a team that I think is blazing in college football, and I'm hopeful that they finish the season blazing, and I'm hopeful that they get a Final Four berth, because I've said that the Pac-12 has been suffering and not been a powerhouse of a conference anymore. Oregon is reawakened my hope that the Pac-12 may be represented on the big stage again. They are sitting at number 7 right now. They just had a big win over USC last night, which people thought was going to be a lot closer of a game. They kind of blew USC out of the water. The way it's shaping up, there's some other things that have to happen. Of course, they have to win out. They have the one loss early this year to Auburn. They have to win out the rest of their schedule. I think they have Arizona State left. A couple of other South, I think another South team in the Pac-12. But if Utah wins out in the South and those two meet up in the Pac-12 championship, that's a top 10 matchup for a championship win. So that's a big win on the resume. Some things have to happen. Some other teams have to lose too. But Notre Dame losing helped. And them not having a championship, so they
fall
out.
Well, Utah should win out because they have UCLA, Arizona, Colorado,
If both of those teams win out, Oregon and Utah, then they'll both be in the top 10 when the Pac-12 championship happens. Oregon winning that Pac-12 championship, I think you can't ignore them for a Final Four bid.
Can you imagine?
And I'm excited about the possibility of Oregon getting to the Final Four for the Pac-12 6. So Oregon's my blazing right now, and I just hope they keep it up for the rest of the year.
And all I'll say is, can you imagine what kind of uniforms Chris Oregon that Phil Knight will provide if they go to a Final Four? It will be the ugliest, gaudiest uniforms on the face of the planet. They'll make Maryland's uniforms look like a formal wear. Let me tell you something. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that because Oregon's team is really good.
And we need the Pac-12 to freaking join the top 5 conferences. Go ahead, Chris.
All right. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned the Rugby World Cup. I'm going to finish with that. The final was very early yesterday morning. My blazing Siya Kolisi, who is he? He is the first ever black captain for South Africa. It was 24 years ago that they won their first Rugby World Cup. Remember, the movie Invictus was made, and it was about how black South Africans and white South Africans united to win the Rugby World Cup. 24 years later, Siya Kolisi, who was not alive, I believe, during that 1995 World Cup run. He is the captain. South Africa wins the Rugby World Cup early Saturday morning. They defeat England in the final. They consider it an upset. And Kolisi had always dreamed of being a Springbok. However, he didn't even own a TV the last time South Africa won the World Cup in 2007. So every 12 years, South Africa wins the Rugby World Cup. So 12 years from now, bet them to win it because it seems to be their MO.
Well, there's Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza. 2 happy hours every day, and we'll be there for Wings, Beer, and Sports tomorrow night. Buffalo Wild Wings Monday Night Football Party. Real quickly, Caleb, we're flying. We're almost out of time. S&B with C, the Raiders lost last week to Houston. Real good game. Raiders going at it again this week. Going to be a tough game against the Detroit Lions, who won also last week, a 500 team, but probably maybe the best 500 team in football. What do you think?
I think they got a chance to win it. I think their favorite coming in, I think it's 2.5 or 3?
That's 3. Right, Raiders now, by 3.
And they're getting healthier. They have a lot of players that were listed as questionable before the game, but I think most of them should play. They're coming back home. It's been a while since they've had a home game. They've been on the road and had a bye. So playing at home, I think, helps them a little bit, maybe just a little bit. I think they get it done against the Lions just because I think the Lions are terrible. And I don't think that the Raiders are as bad as their record shows. I think they've played good football, and they have a solid running game. Derek Carr is playing well this season. I mean, for Derek Carr standards, he's not MVP status Derek Carr that he was a few years back, but he's playing good enough to win football games, and I think they get it done this week against the Lions at home.
He's playing better than I expected him to play in the Raiders. We'll see, but they do have a better running game. Josh Jacobs healthy and Kerryon Johnson out for the season on IR. That finished the Lions off. Real quickly, it's time for Picks of the Week, man. Let's fly through this. I'll just go first and get mine out of the way. The Buccaneers are a terrible team, a team in disarray that can't get it done. They've got Mike Evans, one of the best receivers in the game, but I'm sorry, Jameis Winston, the most inconsistent quarterback I have ever seen, put it that way. He is just one. You could see at moments that the guy's athletic as can be, and a moment later, he just can't make decisions under pressure. That's really his problem, and in the NFL, that's what it's all about. Not for long. 4.5, the Seahawks are giving them. They're at home. I got to take the Seahawks. Chris, who do you like?
Well, it's going to be a Packers home game, despite the fact that the game is being played in Los Angeles. They're laying 4. Packers are going to kick the living hell out of the Chargers, who look like they've quit on the season.
Damn it.
You can go with
them. I was going to pick them, and for the same reason, but also that Devontae Adams is a game-time decision. I think he's going to play because all indications is he's had a great week of play. He's been able to perform in practice. So I think he plays, and that line at 4 is going to – it should jump by game time. So all right. I think Caleb's going that route too.
And, of course, Jose took the Jets. Listen, we're out of time. I want to thank Caleb, Mags, Jose for being here. Thanks to Nate Schmidt for talking with Mags, and also Facebook Live. Tuesday night at Thomas and Mack, Jose and I will be there. We'll be back next week, every week, Sunday, 8 to 9, right here at Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Appreciate our new sponsor, Residential Bank Corp. I'm Brian Feldman. I'm out. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.